The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Friday. Lots going on. We have much to get to. First, real quick, those of you who are following the site understand that I've been putting up at the top of the homepage for some months now the military summary update and analysis. Comes out every day, actually twice a day. And the guy's very good. And he's covering all the issues. Now, I think all of you who have been paying attention know that Russia has laid down multiple red lines. Don't cross this red line or we will be at war. Well, they've done it again, and they have said in the past, Sergei Shoigu made the announcement that if U.S. or U.S. or U.K. supplied missiles are used to strike Crimea, it would officially put the U.S. and U.K. at war with Russia. Well, last night, the Ukrainians fired a number, 8 or 9, maybe even 10, UK Storm Shadow missiles and perhaps others at the Crimean Peninsula. They hit the Black Sea Fleet headquarters and killed at least one Russian service member, probably more. The building was an historic one, and it was largely destroyed. The Russians say they shot down a number of missiles, but obviously one of them got through, at least one, and did a lot of damage. So yet another red line has been crossed. Will Russia stand up and make good on its word, or will it keep rolling over and folding up? It's a game of semantics and words, and we will see soon enough. We are in real deep trouble, and it's getting worse. Zelensky's meeting with Biden today resulted in Biden reversing himself and now saying he will send long-range ATACMS missiles to Ukraine. Zelensky went then to Canada and met with Trudeau and got commissions. I guess, I don't know what he's going to be given, but there were commitments made as well. More money. He's going to 4 or 5 other countries. So this thing's going to go on. U.S. Abrams tanks are supposed to be in Ukraine within a day or two now. They're on the way. That's an upgrade as well. So again, red line after red line. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's not a good situation, and it's getting far worse. Never mind that Zelensky has literally presided over the Holocaust and liquidation of over 500,000 men and women in the Ukraine military since the special military operation by Russia began. And that special military operation had to happen. Ukraine was just about to launch a massive attack on the Donbass. So it's one of those things, like World War II. World War II, same sort of scenario. Going to South Dakota this first hour, talking with Dean Henderson, one of the really great geopolitical military observers on this program and on the planet, for that matter. Hello, Dean. Welcome back.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure. We're getting closer. The Russians, so far, in terms of the red line game, are losing. They haven't upped the ante. They haven't really retaliated in any significant way. They said all decision-making centers involved with any military attack such as just happened last night, on Crimea would be targeted. That suggests London and the Pentagon. Certainly there are decision-making centers in Ukraine, but it's a game of words here at this point. Very dangerous words. What are your thoughts, Annie? What do you think?
Well, my first thought is that it'd be nice if they just declared war on the UK because they were shadow seeker missiles?
Storm Shadow.
Storm Shadow. And so why doesn't Putin just declare war on the city of London and call her good, bomb the shit out of it, done.
I think you have a point, and it's not traditional classic military tactics, but these aren't traditionally classic military times. And I think something like that, just to eradicate the decision-making center in the city of London, would clearly say, we're done. You know, you want to continue?
Go right ahead. I wish he would do it. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think he will. It's just my dealings with RT anyway. You know, I used to do a lot of stuff with them, but they just always want to blame the Americans, and I get the feeling the reason I wasn't invited to come back was because I was trying to explain how, it's the American military, but the financial, political powers in the city of London, economic powers in the city of London, they're calling the shots. And you can really see that out in the open in the Ukrainian conflict. And in Syria as well, you could see it. It was more of the British Special Forces who were captured by the Syrian army and, it turned out to be, behind the white helmets and, the SAS did, the special forces. And now in Ukraine, you see it all, it happened. Well, they hit the Crimean Bridge. That was also, Russians claim that was a British intelligence operation. Yeah. So isn't that enough to declare war? I mean, it's not exactly Crimea, but it's a bridge connecting Crimea. So, no, I agree. I think they need to hold up their red line, and like they said, but as I stated, I think that their best, and just for the whole world, the whole planet, because we all know who's behind this, and it's the same people that have been behind every war for the last 200 to 8,500 years, however you want to look at it. They're just Lockheed Martin and Raytheon. Well, I heard today that, Biden's sending more money, and so $18 billion of that is going to go to expand U.S. arms production, is how they put it. So what that means is basically we're going to pay $18 billion to Raytheon and Lockheed to upgrade their plants for them, good old corporate welfare, and then we'll go ahead and buy the arms from them, too, probably at 5 times what they're worth, kind of like this F-35, that this kid crashed in South Carolina and all this, and they said it has a 55%, effectiveness rate so far. So this F-35 that Lockheed built, that I don't know what that thing cost, $26 billion, one of them, I think. And so,
$80 million a copy. $80 million a copy.
Okay.
And the whole program is $1.3 trillion. It's a junker. It's garbage. The plane is garbage.
It's garbage.
So over half of them at all times are not combat capable. Over half of them. And somebody who flew them or knew about them said that they are so full of electronic warfare vulnerabilities, it's not even funny.
Yeah, and again, you got to remember Lockheed Martin, not an American corporation. It's a Crown Control corporation owned by a bunch of barons and lords and knights. And
it all traces back to the city of London. It does.
It does. So, that's why I say, for Putin to do that would be really savvy politically, too, because, the world's changing. I mean, we just found out, the Indians are accusing the Canadians of harboring terrorists, not just the Sikh guy who they probably did assassinate, because, I traveled in India in the late 80s. I was in Khalistan. I was in the Punjab where the Sikhs were doing their insurrection. And, there was everybody knew that pretty much they were working for the CIA, and everybody knew that they were the ones running the brown sugar heroin through there. And it was common knowledge, and I read a book about it, but I got to, used bookstores used to be a big thing back in the day, right, in India especially, and it was called the CIA in South Asia, and it just detailed the whole relationship with the Sikhs. And then you got to remember, the Sikhs are a bloodline family. That's the Singh family. They're all, every single Sikh is a Singh. That's their last name.
Interesting.
And Yeah, it's weird, but and I was wondering why, and then I found out. Well, in my research, they're definitely one of the powerful old bloodline Anunnaki families.
And see, so there's a big, huge, there's a big, huge tunnel being built in northern India somewhere under the mountains. It's like 100 kilometers long or something. It's huge, and the head guy is named Singh, of course. It's kind of like if his name was could be Goldberg, something. He's part of the gang.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same thing because it's like the, it's another religion that I think is basically like it's a worship of this family, and it's just like Shintoism. If you're familiar with that, it's pretty much the worship of the Yamato emperors.
Shinto.
Yeah, that's what that religion consists of. It's crazy once you take a look at it. And I think Sikh stuff is the same, and it's weird. So.
That's why the Sikhs have been involved with the British military then. I didn't know that.
They were kind of some of the original people they used, exactly, up in, especially, what's that province, the separatist province, Dharamsala. Yeah, the Dharamsala region. The Gurkhas. Yeah, the Gurkhas are tied
there,
with them, too, somehow.
Right.
Yeah, so, right, so, I pop up in weird places, and again, it's one of those family names that you'll see it more and more from news people and so-called experts, and on different things, you'll see that name popping up a lot, so I guess my long roundabout point is, Canada and India, that's also interesting, because India, as we know, is increasingly, kind of, not really pro-Russia, China bloc, but I mean, definitely... Maybe sort of, and they're part of BRICS, and, they're not criticizing the Russians like we want them to. And so we're being real quiet about this whole thing, but Canada and the Sikhs, so it's exposing Canada, too, as a crown project, which it is. And it is harboring terrorists, and that's why Canada has had this lax immigration policy for years. Where they'll let people come in, and a lot of times they're terrorists. They're people that were working for British intelligence or the CIA or the Crown or whatever in some way, and they needed to get away, and they came to Canada. So the world's getting interesting. There's a lot of shifting alliances, and the U.S. and the Crown are on the short end of it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to make one more quick point on this Storm Shadow missile. There's another missile called an SCALP, a scalp. Comes from France, and they may have used a combination, we don't know for sure, but there were at least Storm Shadow missiles involved. Now, America is playing a key role in every one of these attacks, these missile attacks on Crimea, because before every major attack, whether it's on the Kerch Bridge or Crimea itself, American reconnaissance planes fly out over the Black Sea, they're down south of Crimea, they're up plenty high, and they're doing all the coordinating work for all of these attacks.
Yeah, they're running.
So it's the Americans against it's the U.S., U.K. against Russia. That's what it is right now.
Yeah, no, you're right. So
that's
actually, America is implicated. I mean, right. I mean, they're damn sure doing that. So they, it'd be totally reasonable for them to declare war on us too. It'd just be smarter if they did it the other way. Because I've always said, and it's true, it's like the only way there's going to be peace in this world is if the United States or Russia are really close allies. And that means cutting out the city and cutting out maybe Western Europe in general, because they're a bunch
of Western Europe's
a bunch
on the
of
way
allies
out.
And a bunch
they
of,
just pumped 25 million
they're on the way out.
People
yeah.
in there, and they're replacements over there, like the same thing's happening here. They're moving on many fronts to destroy Western civilization. That's what's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it, might just be, like I say, maybe a good thing, because this is where all the royals live, and this is where the bloodlines, they all live in Europe, right? I mean, that's who controls the world. They got castles all over Europe, and we don't really do castles over here. I mean, we don't really look too good upon that. But
we do mansions.
Over there, they do. Yeah, it's getting about that bad, yeah. But, it's a little different.
And private
it's
islands.
Not the really old money, and private islands, yeah. Well, they do it offshore, yeah, there you go. But, at any rate, and they could bomb France, too. If the scalps were involved, that's fine. That's where the Rothschilds are headquartered. I don't mind that either.
Well,
just to make
Macron
it a targeted precision thing and take out the Rothschild estate. And, you can do things like that if you're Russia. So, I just like to see some political savvy and some I don't know. Some of these leaders, especially the ones with a lot of weapons, need to get clued in on what the hell's really going on. And they don't understand.
A Russian minister of parliament, I couldn't name him, but this is about 2 months ago. He said that there must be a Russian-initiated nuclear attack, a shock and awe attack, on certain locations in the West to wake these people up. In other words, what you're saying, take out the city of London, the decision centers, whatever.
Certain places,
take out certain places. And there was a big amount
of
support for
whatever.
That. The Russian people were right behind the guy, and they had a lot of support.
I think if he did that, the whole world would be behind him all of a sudden. Even the Putin haters would probably go, ding dong, okay, took out the Bank of International Settlements in Basel. Oh, okay, this guy's serious. Wouldn't that be something? Just give him a half hour, get all your personnel out. If they don't leave, blood's on your hands, kaboom. And, I mean, they can do that kind of stuff. They can do that kind of stuff. So we just need, and it needs to be Putin, honestly. Nobody else can do it. So
no.
I'd love to see that. I don't know. It gets crazy times right now. You feel like things are really, I feel anyway, like things are shifting really fast away from the West and away from the crown and away from, as far as power, I feel like their power is like slipping away pretty fast here. And
the pendulum is swinging very fast and very hard away from the West.
It is. And we're going to be in harm's way, okay, well, probably, but you know what, whatever. I mean, we'll just, you know, we'll do what we got to do, but fair enough, right? But, I mean, it just seems to me like that's more what's going on. And I think this Canada-India rift, this is going to be a bigger deal than people are seeing it as right now. And I'm pretty sure they did assassinate the guy. Yeah, I mean, he probably deserved it.
He killed people all the time. Oh, God, all the time.
Yeah, and then this guy was a terrorist. I mean, really, the Sikhs, I know the history of this guy, and he was some guru and whatever. But which is the whole, you know, it's a Babylon mystery religion, you could call it, you know, I think, because that's what that was all about.
Here's the story. The guy's name, I just looked it up. The guy's name is Karaganov, K-A-R-A, Karaganov. Karaganov's case for Russian nuclear preemption, responsible strategizing, or dangerous delusion. That's the headline of the paper. And he did, I believe, go a little further than selected areas, but let me see here. In a controversial essay, noted Russian academician, commentator, and former Kremlin advisor Sergei Karaganov recently called for Russia to launch limited nuclear strikes on Western Europe as a way to restore nuclear deterrence and to bring the war in Ukraine to a favorable, quick conclusion. Even though the idea, and that certainly concepts are applicable to nuclear coercion, is not entirely new, not surprisingly, Karaganov, his article provoked a vigorous debate in Russia and the West. His proposal and other Russian political and military thinking about nuclear weapons raised profound questions whether Russia might attempt to conduct a so-called limited nuclear war. It's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe without the nukes. I mean, I don't know if they got two nukes, but maybe they do. I mean, I don't know. Probably not. But no, it kind of is. And I'm glad he said.
Well, if you send an ICBM over with a fuel air bomb, I guess you could do a lot of damage with a number
maybe.
Of those. But
if
you launch them, the West
expert,
will read them and they'll say, "Oh, incoming nukes." They're not going to figure out that unless they're told in advance, we're going to launch 10 missiles. None of them will be having nuclear warheads.
That's fuel air FABs. I worry about the response from the West is what I worry about. If it was nukes, because these people are mad, right? So don't give them any reason. But, however you want to do it, I don't care. You can send an assassin into the Basel thing and just take out the head of it. There's all kinds of ways to do it.
Yeah.
But
Brussels.
I just think they got to get serious about targeted. The guy's right about targeted. It has to be targeted. You know, it's not, Putin knows damn well, you know, it's not the American people's fault. What's going on? He knows damn well it ain't the UK's, you know, the average person's fault. He's smart enough to know that. So, you know, you gotta do. Yeah, and I like that he said Western Europe. At least he said targeted things on Western Europe. He didn't say the United States. So, you know, that part's smart because that's really where the power center is. And let's face it. I mean, anybody that's been looking at this stuff knows that it's, you know, it's the city. City of London, it's Switzerland. Lugano's another one. It's like a free state.
Brussels.
You know, where they dirty money, Brussels. Yeah, all over. And, you know, so there is definitely a lot of targets. It's target-rich environment, Western Europe. And that would teach some sons of bitches a lesson, maybe. But I don't know what else does.
Well, that's
you got to hit them on their home. You got to hit them at their house, man. I mean, you got to hit their castle, because these bastards, otherwise they don't care. They think they're above it all. And
we are at the end of the line now, and what you're saying makes perfect sense to me. Nothing else works. No treaties, no negotiations, no compromise. Nothing works.
You can't do that.
Imagine Putin.
You can't do that. These people.
Imagine Putin and the Russian hierarchy sitting back and watching America being invaded. No more borders. Being taken down financially, economically, morally, spiritually destroyed. And Putin and the Russian people, they're going to protect the morality and the substance of their culture at all costs.
Oh, yeah.
They know if you no longer have international borders and you're no longer a functional country, your nation state status is gone. You lose your borders, you're no longer a country or a culture. You're gone.
Eagle Pass is wide open. That's what they're telling. All the smugglers are telling them, go to Eagle Pass. They go to Eagle Pass, let them through, process them, release them in the U.S. That's what's happening in Eagle Pass every day. I mean, it's just... No, and it is. It's just a targeted attack on this country in so many ways. And we know who's targeting us. We know who's behind it. We know who's been behind everything. Doesn't matter, terrorism, genocide, slavery, man, you name it, war, you name it. Famines, bad weird weather. You come on, man. It's time to somebody with some freaking guns to do something about it. That's all I'm saying. I don't have that kind of guns, man. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I did, I'm just saying.
I understand.
I just don't have them. So, but it's just, kind of like the Bruce Coburn song, right? If I had a rocket launcher. And I don't know. I just would really like to see the Russians get more.
Somebody's going to have to make a move, or this is going to all just go up. All of it.
Well, it is because India's going to side with those guys. The BRICS is going to take off. The dollar is going to go away as an international currency. I mean, if this keeps up with all this inflation that the sanctions are causing, and the sanctions are causing it. That
it's
we
like
put on Russia are causing inflation here. We're shooting
12%.
Ourselves in the foot. Like every day we get up with a freaking 12 gauge and we just like boom, shoot another hole in our foot. And why? And Joe Biden, two uncles worked for the East India Company. I don't know. You tell me why. Kamala Harris married to Doug Emhoff, vice president. He's the Crown's former head lawyer. You know, through Piper DLC law firm. So you tell me. You tell me why somebody's controlled demolition in this country. But we need help. We need help from the outside. Obviously, we need help from, I think Russia's the only entity you can do
that's
it.
That's really the only place to look to at this point. I can think of no other location. You're right. Hold on just a second. Dean Henderson and I will be right back with more. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Dean Henderson. Marvelous things to think about when you are a big thinker, because the world is now in a state of having to do... Something's going to happen here in the next couple months, I think. I don't know what. In fact, some remote viewers, Dick Allgaier's group, has come up with that as well. Something very big before the end of the year. I wouldn't be surprised. It seems that Zelensky, on his trip over here, had a private meeting with Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Now, he's a World Economic Forum tramp, McCarthy. So there's so many power lines connecting all these things. Here's a little excerpt from an article. Let me read this, Dean. Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. It's very well written. It talks about what we've discussed briefly in the last half hour, a limited nuclear exchange. And it starts out, answering either question requires some conjecture about U.S. versus Russian approaches to escalation and control and management. It seems straightforward to set tactical nuclear weapons apart from longer-range and higher-yield strategic nuclear forces. A firebreak, as it were, between the two kinds of weapons can therefore be imagined. But in the confusion and alarm surrounding the start of nuclear warfare, mutual agreement on thresholds for limiting escalation may be difficult to arrange. Even more challenging would be the establishment of thresholds and firebreaks with respect to strategic nuclear exchanges, the big stuff. The rationale for limited strategic options includes two aspects: the immediate destruction that the weapons cause and the message that they send about the ability and willingness to up the ante of destruction unless the other side agrees to terms. From the U.S. standpoint, the objective is to influence the opponent with the manipulation of risk idea and the threat that leaves something to chance. And it goes on from there. But this is heavy thinking. It's good thinking. They are trying to figure this out in advance before it happens, how it could be used, what the odds. And they're running this in computer war simulation games all the time. Make no mistake about it. And now with AI trying to ascertain the mind state of various governmental leaders, that's thrown into the mix as well. So this is on the table right now. And if Brussels, the UK decision-making centers in the city of London or wherever they are, maybe some U.S., we have a lot over in Europe we could see taken out too. Maybe that would be a tactic. That's what people are thinking. And believe me, it's being talked about all the time. Go ahead, Dean. Whoop, did we lose Dean? Hello, Dean. All right. What do you think, Todd? Yeah, we lost him. All right, well, we're getting back. Now, this idea of limited destruction with nuclear weapons, as opposed to all-out strategic heavyweight throws back and forth, again, I do believe is on the table now and being gamed all the time. They're trying to figure it out in advance. Vladimir Putin has made explicit references to the possibility, I mentioned this last half hour, of nuclear first use in the case of unacceptable losses by Russia. So when the losses become unacceptable, that's when the stuff is going to hit the fan. I don't see any other way to look at it. You there, Dean?
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. That was weird.
All right. Were you able to hear anything?
I didn't hear. I started just saying, you know, the bulletin of atomic scientists, you know, they've been a good bunch since way back. And then you said you couldn't hear me after that, so I didn't hear anything after.
Oh, you heard nothing else. All right, I just, they made the point in their article here that there are two levels of nuclear use. Limited, taking out strategic targets like you've been talking about. They call that a fire break. There's a break after that. It doesn't go full throw weight. It's not total nuclear Armageddon. And how that's used. And I've been suggesting to our listeners that that very concept is on the table 24 hours a day, and they're using AI now to further do analysis and analytics by looking at the leaders and the mindsets of the leaders of varying countries who might be involved, such as Russia, the U.S., the U.K., France, for example. I think this is a real possibility. The remote viewers are now saying that something big is going to happen before the end of the year. Big.
I feel the same way, and I think it has to do too a little bit with the economy in general. Just things are real fragile right now. I mean, they're not letting on to it, but you know, it could be just
12% inflation.
Crash.
That's a reasonable number for us right now.
And you know, they're not getting a handle on it. It's not really working, and so you know, everybody, okay, rates are going to be high a long time, and it's really spooking them this week. I think the Nasdaq had its worst week this year, maybe this week. And I think it's on the way down. And so, you know, this is how they do stuff, right? I mean, they need reflation. What do? They go to war. They do. You know, they cause some conflagration. So I would not, it's dangerous times. It always is. But I think this, right up to the end of the year, it's going to be something crazy. I agree. And then you got, you know, interesting thing like Poland, you know, with the grain and getting into this row. Zelensky basically talking trash about him at the UN. And now Poland's pissed at Ukraine, and a lot of people, I know Scott Ritter, I think, said one time, you know, basically Russia they'll get the Donbass and Crimea and Poland. They'll probably invade Western Ukraine and just take it eventually. And because they're kind of historically not, they don't really get along. It's just they kind of got pushed together by this thing.
It's a situation that, and I know the people in Donbass, by and large, are very unhappy with the way Russia has been conducting this war. That's what it is, a war. But they're fighting it like World War I with high tech. They're not really trying to roll over Kharkov, Odessa, nothing to do with Kiev. They won't even go there. They feigned that one attack early and didn't go.
Yeah.
But something, if the people in Donbass do not see a decisive Russian physical military victory over Ukraine, and I mean those three cities I mentioned, Kiev, Kharkov, and Odessa, they're going to be very unhappy. That's not a victory. They will look at that as a defeat. They will, and they've got reason to. They will not take charge and control. And in the meantime, the Ukraine military will sit back with Storm Shadow missiles, S-200s, S-300s, and continue to lob them into Donetsk, right into the downtown area of Donetsk, killing civilians, children, the whole thing. So it's not going to end unless Russia rolls it all up. And if Poland walks into the western third of the country, let's say, or fourth, 25%, Lviv and west, I don't see any way for this to end. It's going to just go on indefinitely.
Yeah. Seems like it. Yeah, because the Russians, obviously, their thing is, I mean, they're just like, okay, we have the territory we want. We've had the referendums. We've got our people in power. Now just back off. Here's our lines of defense. Try to cross them. And that's mostly what they're doing, right? But, I mean, I agree, and I think, you know, I always said from the very, very beginning of this war, I said this is what they want, this is what they'll take, and then if the Ukrainians keep fighting, then there's going to be other stuff. So now I think it's Odessa. I think the Russians just going to take, they're going to have to just to appease the people in Donbass, to appease the Russian people, they have to take Odessa, they have to landlock the country, and then they should be talking behind the scenes to Poland about real traffic for
I'm sure
grain.
That probably is going on, Dean.
It's probably happening. So, I wouldn't either. So, you know, I mean, I think, you know, this, there's a lot of Western leaders are getting pretty tired of this little guy and, you know, the same clothes and whatever, showing up and just uninvited and begging for money and then criticizing them for not doing enough and, you know, basically just, evil gnome.
Let me jump in. Hold on. Why, if this is a real war and Russia is determined to stop the Ukrainian military from harassing, killing, and shelling the people in Donbass, why do Odessa, Kharkov, and Kiev still have water and power? Why are they operating in relatively normal status? Why is Zelensky still around? And his Jewish heritage may have something to do with that. Think about it.
Could be, but I know. There's a lot of things that just seem, like, why don't you just go ahead and take care of this? And I mean, I understand, you know, and I do think part of it is Putin doesn't want a lot of bloodshed. And I know he doesn't want to destroy Odessa. It's a historic city. It's Russian.
He's already killed over 500,000 Ukrainian men, Christian men and women.
But yeah.
500,000.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
He had to.
Because they just keep coming at them. They just keep coming across the minefields and blowing themselves up. Whatever, four levels of minefields to get across, and they've got across one so far, and then they claim victory. And so we took this village of three people down here.
Which has been
leveled
to the ground.
It's a bloodbath, so it's not even a war anymore. So that's the other thing. I mean, even the U.S. intelligence communities, you know, there was some leak that I heard about today that, you know, that says that they're pretty much saying Ukraine's lost the war, you know. Like, it's over. That's from our intelligence community. So then they have, but it's just, here we go. It's just gone and on and on with this Zelensky guy, and he knows it too. But, you know, I guess he's just getting kicked back some money. He gets to travel all over the world, glad-handing people,
a billionaire,
stay in nice hotels. He doesn't give a shit. I'm sure. Right. So, you know, and he probably is, you know, it's just sick. Somebody on the, doesn't that be U.S. leader, doesn't that be somebody in the West has to just stand up and say, hey, this guy's ridiculous. What are you doing? And then they won't do it because they're all World Economic Forum people or East India Company people or, you know, they're all bought by the Illuminati cartel, the Anunnaki Crown, whatever. I mean, it's they're all part of that. And so just into Elder, yeah, free speech is the enemy of the people, whatever. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know,
Zelensky is alive for a reason. And it was suggested early on that the International Zionist Cartel, let's just call them that, told Putin, you know, this man is not to be taken out. Or they would have taken him out a year ago, a year and a half ago. So he's still there for a reason. A reason. I don't know what it is, but he's there.
Yeah, a reason. Yeah, I know. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd just like to see the Russians just say, oh, we don't care. Kaboom.
I think a lot of people are coming.
What you say. You don't
really
care about
us.
We are. We're not the boss. You're not the boss anymore. We are. We got more nuclear weapons than you got. So shut the fuck up. I'm sorry, pardon my language, but I mean, pretty much, because that's what I'm waiting for, just somebody to do that with these bankers I hoes, because that's what they need. They don't, like I said, they don't understand anything else. We'd be great if we could vote them out, or be great if we could, you know, negotiate with them. And no. You don't understand. These are things. These are vile creatures. These are ticos. They operate from a position of constant fear of everything, including nature, including their own nature. Definitely you. They will kill you in two seconds and not even worry about it. So, no. So they just need to be taken out. This cabal, this ancient cabal, needs to finally, once and for all, just be taken out. Maybe it's a chance to do it.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Don't hold your breath, Jeff.
If something big isn't done, this will drag on for another year or more. Easily, it could easily do it. Mm-hmm. Zelensky's talking about the winter offensive now and all that. Did you see where they're actually drafting pregnant women now? And they've got these special military body armor suits for pregnant women,
that's
Ukrainian
sick.
Soldiers.
That's
satanic sick
stuff. Yeah, satanic Babylonian Talmud smut nastiness. Wow. No, it doesn't surprise me though. This is a vile bunch, man, running Ukraine. It really is, and they're involved in so much human trafficking, organ trafficking, prostitution, drug
child
running,
trafficking.
And they
don't
were
forget
for,
that.
And they were
don't
for decades. They've been doing. Yeah, they're the biggest USAID. Recipient for years, ever since the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. And no, it's a dirty country. And so, I don't know.
It is a dirty country. That's sad for the Ukrainian people. They're good people.
Oh,
they've been railroaded by
it's not their fault.
This regime that has been forced on them. Now the opposition's been outlawed. It's just like basically here.
Yeah.
This crap, this
Catholic church has been
presidency. It's been forced on us. Look what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're destroying the country.
It's not that much different.
Right in front of our eyes.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not that much different. It's just more low-intensity warfare, I guess, here, right? You know, just starvation and poverty. But at least the unions, the few unions we have are striking. You know, that's kind of a good sign. I like seeing that, and I hope that continues. I hope there's a lot more people, workers going on strike in this country.
Well, the
screenwriters
guild. Do you know much about that?
Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot.
A big get together and a sit down and a negotiation, and they made zero progress. So they went today.
Right.
They went back out on the streets. Now it's all about AI and the screenwriters.
Right.
Who's going to win?
Right.
AI
is
going to win eventually. They're trying to make it so that they have to have human-written screenplays, scripts, storylines, dialogue, not AI. And that's a big part of this. I'm not a
It's a big deal, too.
On,
yeah, it's important.
But that is the future.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my take. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really the auto workers, there's a lot of that, too, because they're saying, you know, when we go to electric cars, it's going to require less workers and more AI and da-da-da-da. So there's definitely a big component of that in those negotiations as well. And so these are important, and I think it's important too because American left just got decimated and got Tavistock instituted, you know, just like it did in the '60s with the hippies. This time it was the trannies, whatever. But they got Tavistock instituted, and Trump was a big part of that. He was the big actor in that movie that did it. And so we just need this whole new organic kind of left. And maybe this is it. You know, this kind of straight looking guy that he's really well spoken. Actually, I can't remember his name, but he's for the auto workers union, Swain, I think. but he's kind of a geeky looking guy, right? But straight laced looking and just but really articulate, you know. Mm-hmm. I think. And
I haven't seen him.
So yeah, he's on. You'll see him getting interviewed. Ron Klain is not Ron Klain. It's Ron something anyway. Yeah, and their leader anyway is pretty good. Refreshing, kind of. Yeah, doesn't wear suit, and he's really militant. I mean, he's like, we're not backing down, you know. And these companies are greedy, and it's a bunch of billionaires, and he really talks a lot of class, you know, class issues, and it's refreshing. I'm sure they
he's the UAW would love it if president. He wasn't.
I guess so. He must be. Yeah, he must be. He's being interviewed a lot, you know, just by pretty much
Sean
the mainstream
Fain.
Media. There you go. That's
Sean
it. Sean Fain. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sean Fain. That's the guy.
Oh, yeah. He does look
but
a little
I like
he looks like a nerd.
Yeah. He looks like a total nerd, yeah. But he's really well-spoken and, like I say, pretty militant, you know. So, I don't know. It could. This is the kind of thing that brings them down. This is another thing people, you know, just need to take on themselves and, you know, get back to where, you know, working people can take a vacation. Working, you know.
Is this what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Old style, Kennedy style, Democratic
yeah,
values.
Yeah, I guess basically that's what I'm saying. Sure. Yeah, that's right. Yep, FDR, Kennedy, you know, stuff. That's all based on economic analysis, you know, of the situation. You know, rich and poor, and that's it. Leave all the other shit out. We don't care. go have your little, I don't know, meetings and stuff, but we don't care about all that stuff. It's just rich and poor. It's a class thing.
And
the rich declare
Sean
my position. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, yeah.
I'm going to play just a little bit. I've never heard
Let's
his
hear.
Voice, so I'm kind of curious. Yeah. You got my curiosity awakened here.
You continue the alliteration, but this is kind of part of the negotiating process, right? What's really probably more frustrating is that there's not predictability here. Not that negotiations are predictable, but over the course of UAW talks in the last generation, there has been kind of a pattern. There has been kind of predictable things. They start with a handshake, they progress, they get down to the wire. And what Sean Fain has done here is thrown out the playbook. And that is perhaps
he's not up yet. I thought he'd be up in the beginning of this, so I apologize.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's talking about Sean Fain.
But even at the end, though, he said, you know, what Sean Fain has done is thrown out the playbook. And that's kind of what I feel like, too. He's just, it's a whole different feeling to these strikes. And I don't know. He invited Biden to come stand on the picket line. You know. So you're pro union president. You're also what Scranton, Pennsylvania, working class guy, right, Joe? And he won't, but he invited him publicly, and that was pretty savvy. And they asked him, do you endorse Biden? No, he said, I don't endorse Biden. I don't support Biden. So he's his own cat, and he's talking a lot of really good stuff about class, just about, you know, hey man. What do you say, auto workers or auto executives, you know, since the pandemic started, their compensation has gone up like 44% in 3 years. And they made the auto workers take cuts back in 08 when they bailed out GM and bailed out the bankers, you know. And they didn't really, you know, so who bailed out the auto GM was basically their workers, you know, because they took these cuts and these, you know, benefit. Everything got whacked and they never got it back. Still haven't got it back, for one thing. So, yeah, they're demanding like a 40% increase in wages, which is crazy. You're not going to get it, but they might get 30.
Well, it's always negotiation tactics. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You can't
of course, yeah.
You can't go up. You can always reduce and borrow.
Yeah.
Here's a little Sean Fain. Now I got it.
Okay.
Your effort against intense employer opposition to win their union. And also to Regional Director Brandon Mancia and lead organizer Josh Gilbert for their great work on this effort.
All right, let me move it up.
Our left are stuck in a tiered system where it takes 22 years to get to top pay. Our members have said enough is enough, and they are being strongly supported by Secretary Treasurer Margaret Mock, Region 1A Director LaShawn English, and Region 1D Director Steve Dawes. They are all working together to raise awareness and build public support for this critical fight. Just yesterday.
Okay, there's just a little sample. That's Sean Fain, the president of the United Auto Workers. Yeah, yes, he's exactly as you described. Smart man, obviously.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah, kind of a camo shirt on today, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
But anyway, no, it's just something they understand. They don't understand unless either you got to take them out with force or you got to quit working their stupid jobs. And then they understand, too, because they all, you know, it's the, you know, they, of course, they take credit for all the great things they do. But, you know, all this stuff happens because of people building those cars, man, the people that actually get their hands dirty, actually go to work every day. Put in 40 hours, you know, and right. Those are the people that don't get no credit in this world no more. And
none.
It's got to change. No. And it's, nobody, you know, it's part of what, it's part of what Putin's fighting against in Ukraine. It's the same damn thing. It's political.
You know? Yes, it is. All right, Dean, thanks. A lot of topics in this hour, a lot of things to think about. You be careful. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you too, Jeff. Right on. Thanks so much.
Okay, brother.
Yeah, have
thanks.
A good one.
Okay. Okay, Dean Henderson. Wish we had more Dean Hendersons. It's not possible. He's that good. We will be back with much more next.